Big news hitting the NFL last week. Aaron Rodgers, now a Pittsburgh Steeler. Jaire Alexander is no longer a Green Bay Packer. And the Texans revamped the running back room, picking up Nick Chubb. Along with this, our top five tight ends and a preview of the NFC East. You're listening to the Pulmarooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You're listening to the Pulmarooski Podcast by Power 88, Dean Radio, and Secret Weapon Consulting. He's CJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. Let's get into it. Got a good one lined up for you today. As we'll start out with Aaron Rodgers signing with the Steelers. Obviously, the news is just short of a week old at this point, but now we're getting to it right now. 1 year, $13 million contract, and this kind of at the point where people thought where Rodgers was going to sign with the Steelers, and that was basically the only team left that people were going to say that he was going to sign with as well. Took a little bit longer, I would say. I think most people knew it was going to be after the NFL schedule was released, which they were right. Ended up happening that way. Doesn't matter what the theories are. The theory was that wanted to see how many primetime games the Steelers were going to get or something like that. And if they didn't get a ton, then he would sign, which also ended up being somewhat true as well. But yeah, 1 year, $13.65 million deal for Rodgers. I mean, what else are you really going to say at this point? You know what you're going to expect when you get Rodgers. You're going to get somewhat a good play. I don't know how much of the same Aaron Rodgers from last year we're going to get, but now the Steelers look a little bit better than what they were looking like. I mean, you're going from Mason Rudolph to Aaron Rodgers, or what you thought you were going to start out with Mason Rudolph and maybe go to Will Howard. You're now starting with Aaron Rodgers. And he's going to be throwing a DK Metcalf, which is going to be somewhat of fun football in itself. But I think the facts are the facts. You're still looking at a 8-9, 9-8 record here if you're the Steelers. CJ, what are your thoughts?
In terms of last year to this year, I got some news for you, my fellow Americans. This doesn't move the needle at all. I'm sorry, it just doesn't. I don't understand why I'd say, oh, watch out for the Steelers. They're going to be sneaky good. No. No, you're not. I'm sorry. They're not a team I'm afraid of. And you have these people, I call them the Rodgers truthers, that will say, actually, if you look at the stats last year, he was not bad. You know, still sub 4,000 yards, but 3,897 yards, 28 touchdowns, 11 picks. You know, that's fine. But here's the thing, right? For QB, numbers are great, but when you stuff the stat sheet and it doesn't translate into wins, it's just empty calories. And I'm sorry, the stats say one thing, but the one thing, right, that trumps stats, especially when it comes to quarterbacks, it's all about the eye test. And Aaron Rodgers just doesn't pass the eye test. Because here's the thing, it doesn't matter what the stats are, because, for example, look at Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow. You can run up all your numbers, but it doesn't necessarily translate into success. Yeah, I mean, you look at their career records and look at their stats, and there's a bit of a disconnect. I think it's the same thing with Aaron Rodgers right now. And even still, his stats are okay. I mean, they're not bad, but they're really not that good, you know? And like I said, it's just, he just didn't look good. And I don't care what the stats say, if the QB doesn't even look good, then odds are the team's not going to be good, which is probably why he led the Jets to a 5-12 record last year. And there is something that I do want to make abundantly clear for everyone listening. When we look at Rodgers' stats, right? a lot of these really, really good games he has had were literally from him just wailing on really bad teams. For example, he threw three touchdowns against the injury-riddled and underperforming Houston Texans. He had another three touchdown game against the lowly Jacksonville Jaguars. He had a four touchdown game against the Miami Dolphins, who literally just don't function in the cold. So congratulations, Rodgers. Literally 10 of your 28 touchdowns were just you wailing on really bad teams. I mean, I wouldn't even say, to be fair, maybe not the Texans, but hey, you saw what the Texans were last year. They were underperforming. They were just not that good. You know, they're another team that just didn't pass the eye test. So yeah, look at you, Rodgers. Like, do you feel good about yourself stuffing the stat sheet against really bad teams, you know, grossly inflating your numbers and saying, oh, look at me, I'm still good? I mean, that's pretty much it. Or who could forget? Remember when they lost to Denver 9-10? No touchdowns? I remember that. I remember you losing to Buffalo twice. You lost to New England once. So even still, some of the other teams that are more questionable, like I said, like New England or the Arizona Cardinals or even the Colts you lost to. So no. You don't get to beat up on bad teams and still even lose to some of these bad teams and say, oh, but I'm still good. Now, as for the Steelers themselves, is Mike Tomlin a masochist? Seriously, like, he seems to, and I'm tired of that nickname. Oh, he's the Diva Whisperer. He knows how to get them to fall in line. Like, really? He got Antonio Brown to fall in line? He got Le'Veon Bell to fall in line? He got all these guys to fall in line? George Pickens most recently? No, they said, you're such a head case, it's easier to trade you than to deal with another minute of your BS. So, yeah, and also, when you have Rodgers, who's one of the more mercurial quarterbacks in the National Football League, compared with DK Metcalf, who has a notorious temper, right? And granted, he's not as bad as Pickens, but he's still kind of a head case. And I mean, I feel like he probably goes a step or two beyond normal receiver diva-ness. It's not a word, but you know. And you really think they're going to get along? Like, oh yeah, I can't wait till DK Metcalf is throwing his helmet down again and getting in Rodgers' face, and Rodgers just tells him exactly where he can stick his complaints, because that's what Rodgers does. Rodgers demands ultimate loyalty from his players, and when he doesn't get that, he pouts and will probably get your coach fired. I mean, you saw what happened to Robert Saleh, and I will maintain, even though I'm a Pats fan, I don't think Robert Saleh was the problem with the Jets. And as far as the Steelers go, like I said, like, don't get me wrong, you probably get some juice out of Rodgers, especially Mike Tomlin, who I think is an okay coach. But once again, they need to get off the QB carousel. You know who they remind me of? Remember when the Indianapolis Colts lost Andrew Luck and they spent a solid like 3 to 4 seasons just on the QB carousel, just going from bridge QB to bridge QB? That's Pittsburgh. That is exactly what Pittsburgh is doing. And at some point, you got to get off the carousel. Like, you just have to. But the thing is, the big issue with Pittsburgh is that they're a very arrogant organization. They're extremely prideful. They are incapable of admitting when they've made a mistake, and they're more likely to double down on it than anything. In fact, remember when they had that really terrible offensive coordinator, Matt Canada, and they had to fire him midseason? That was the first time the Steelers fired a coach, be it coordinator, head coach, or anything else, during a season since World War II. I wish I was joking, but that is unfortunately very true. And another part of their pride extends to the fact that they refuse to tank. And now our producer, Adam, has said about tanking how he understands it, but he's not a fan. And he says how it could become an addiction when things don't go your way. You just blow it up. That's something he has said before. Or it's like, or no, not addiction, a habit. He said tanking can become a habit, which honestly, I do agree. But Pittsburgh's got to blow it up. Because as long as you are mediocre, as long as you just keep going 9-8, you're never going to get a good quarterback. unless you're willing to like give an arm and a leg to move up into the draft, you know, like unless you are willing, and you look, we all know if you want to move up into the top 10 from the mid round, that costs you a fortune. And until they, you know, go below 500, they're just not going to, you know, they're just not going to have the ability to take a swing at a top prospect. I mean, unless you're willing to settle for Kenny Pickett or whatever one is just considered not good enough to go in the top 10 QB wise. And that's just the long and short of it. And I will say one thing. I don't care what the pundits say. I don't care what the talking heads say. I think Tomlin's seat is starting to get a little warm. Because the last time the Steelers won a playoff game, I was a freshman in high school. Because they beat the Dolphins, and then they beat someone, a different team. I want to say it was the Chiefs, to lose in the AFC Championship game that year. But then that was it. They've been to the playoffs a few times, but they're always one and done. And unless the fans are starting to get tired of the mediocrity, and personally, I don't blame them for it. I really don't. But once Tomlin's claim to fame, which is he's never had a losing season, as soon as that's gone, as soon as he has a losing season, he's going to look mighty fireable, you know? Because technically you can't get rid of him. You know, he's never had a losing season. Oh, but if he does, then just like that, all that protection is gone. But then again, the Steelers won't do anything. They just won't. I mean, they're very set in their ways, organization, and when you add Rodgers into the mix, like they're not a contender. They're not bad enough to tank. Say with me, kids, just another year where they are mediocre.
Yeah. I'm pretty much setting up for essentially the same thing, another mediocre season or a mid season at best. And I said the same thing that you said, basically. This is a team that needs to tank, but they're not willing to tank. So there's your problem. But with the Rodgers signing, a lot of people look to the schedule, of course. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting matchups coming up for the Steelers schedule. Week one at New York, the Jets. So that'll be a fun little week one storyline to go after once we get there. And then they're playing the entirety of the NFC North. So bunch of storylines there, of course, facing off against Green Bay at home for Sunday Night Football. And then also playing the Bears around Thanksgiving time as well. So that'll be another fun one. So there's going to be some solid storylines throughout the season for these games. Doesn't mean that they're going to be good games. No, I do not think that this game against Minnesota that they'll be in London for, wherever the hell they're going to be at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, is going to be a good game. It's fun to talk about, but other than that, not really. Looking at some of the other storylines, Jair Alexander getting released by the Packers. And this was one of those things where both sides were trying to figure out potential trade options, even a restructured contract that would have kept him in Green Bay. But last week, or actually yesterday, Jair Alexander ended up getting released. Only 28 years old, but we've mentioned this before, especially when we were doing our top five cornerbacks. You know, there's a little bit of an injury history here. Still, one of the better cornerbacks in the league, but that's your problem at that point is the injury history. So it's going to be interesting to see how some of these teams or which teams take a flyer on them.
Yeah. There are some good fits for him. Like, for example, I know the Ravens have been sniffing around him. Hell, even the Vikings have. It's just, One of the things that I don't think it's talked about enough with Jair Alexander is that he's quietly becoming a diva. He literally had one game where he shut down Justin Jefferson, and then he starts running his mouth. And then he wants us to conveniently forget that the next time they met up, I believe Jefferson put 100 yards on his head and hung a touchdown on him as well. And a lot of this is also a money thing, too, is there behind the scenes, I believe, were some contract disputes with Alexander as well. And I hate to say it, but it's unfortunately very true. Alexander does not deserve to be paid like a top five corner because he's great at coverage, both man and zone. He's a good tackler, but he's forgotten that your best ability is your availability. And that is just an ability he does not have. He has only played, I believe, a combined 14 games over the past two seasons. In fact, hold on, I'm actually going to look at that because I'm a big fan of his game. It's just, you got to stop running your mouth if you can't stay healthy. Yeah, I was right. 14 games over the past two seasons. Then he played 16 games in 2022. Good for him. And then four games in 2021. I mean, really? This is really the hill we're going to die on. Is it Jair Alexander? So think about it this way, right? There's 17 games in a season since then over the past 4 years. So what is 17 times four? That's 68. 68 games that he could play. Right? I mean, that's very true. But he played 34. That's half. He has missed half the games he could have played over the last 4 years. And don't give me this whole, well, actually, did you know that he's the best when he's on the field? It's like, okay, when he's not on the field for half the season, then he's just not the best. I mean, statistically, he's good. It's just, if you could get anything more than 10 games out of him, then consider it a miracle.
Yeah, that's going to be the problem. I mean, if the Ravens get him, that'll be a great fit because the Ravens love to be hurt on defense a lot. So that'll be a fantastic fit. So speaking of, I guess, contract negotiations or players disgruntled about certain contracts, James Cook, according to Adam Schefter, and this was from Sunday, he has basically disconnected himself from the organization and the city put his house up for sale. Might be old news, but was he in training camp? Hey, my fault. He was at training camp, but you know, that was going to be a little interesting because, you know, especially the fact of, or the part of him, his house being put up for sale, but throw that out the window. So what was the, Nick Chubb. That was the other one we were going to go after. Nick Chubb signing a 1-year deal with the Houston Texans. There's our feel good story for today. A guy that tore everything but the skin in his knee. And here he is getting another shot with the Texans. I wanted him to do good in that year after injury with Cleveland last year. And it's tough to get back into the swing of things, especially when you get thrown in like middle of the season on a team that just sucked. But this is a good opportunity for Chubb to kind of revitalize his career a little bit, especially in a running back room that's going to feature himself, of course, Joe Mixon. So that can be pretty fun to see those two go at it with each other or go at it and terrorize the rest of the league. But that's the other question, though, too, is Nick Chubb going to be able to get back to the form that we saw him pre-tearing everything in his knee? CJ, what are your thoughts?
Well, that's a good question, Chris. There is a tweet being fed to me from by Adam. Apparently, the Bills running back we were talking about, James Cook, said that I like my money. That's why I'm here. And he's apparently planning to be in training camp.
Mandatory mini camp, actually.
Mandatory mini camp. Same. Come on. I mean, he's training still going to be started, just, yeah. The thing is, this look, Chris, I get it, but Ian Rappaport did say training camp. And I will say one thing. I mean, that's nice, but we're taught from the time we're toddlers that actions speak louder than words. I mean, he can say all this, but it doesn't change the fact that he like put his house up for sale. But yeah, let's just leave that be. So as far as Nick Chubb goes, man, just talk about a guy you feel bad for. Like, oh my God. Seriously, man. Nick Chubb, like the past two seasons, just has not been able to stay healthy. I mean, last season, only played in 8 games, 3.3 yards a carry, 3 total touchdowns, I think. He might have had a receiving one, I think, but or maybe 4 total, but geez. It's clear that, and here's the thing with Nick Chubb, right? He was drafted back in 2018, and we have spent countless hours on this show talking about how, well, you know, once running backs get that one injury, or even when they turn a certain age, they're just never the same. And it's true. Those ACL tears, Achilles tears, whatever, they're often a death sentence for running backs. And Nick Chubb, who's been hurt for the past two seasons and will be turning 30 this December, I don't know if he's a star anymore, which is a shame. I'm a massive fan of Nick Chubb. That guy is a problem. But I do think he could be a good number two. You know, like I'm struggling to think of someone of his skill set that would have to be a number two. But hey, I feel like once he's back, he's still going to be a problem. But it's probably better that he's not going to be a bell cow. He and Joe Mixon is going to be a scary backfield. Forget 1-2 punch. That's a 1-2 haymaker. Because Mixon's a bit of a power back in his own right. And then you've got Nick Chubb, just who is the power back. That's like, defensively speaking, getting hit by a baseball bat and then getting whacked over the head by a brick.
I think that's a great way to describe Nick Chubb and Joe Mixon. Nick Chubb basically runs like a freaking brick. And you mentioned the fact that he's about to turn 30, right? And you know, we're looking at some of these other running backs start to get up there in age, aka like Derrick Henry. You could even throw Saquon in there as well. Nick Chubb, I feel like, would have definitely been one of those guys in the Derrick Henry, Saquon, throwing Joe Mixon as well, of guys that were going to reset the running back market like those three have done so far. If Nick Chubb doesn't get hurt, he's the fourth member of what could be the four horsemen of running backs that do that. But instead we have a trio instead.
So yeah.
Not like his legacy is being tarnished, but Nick Chubb's legacy could have been heightened that much more.
Yeah. I mean, injuries are just brutal. One of the problems is also that Derrick Henry's a fun category, but he seems to be more of the exception than the rule. And there just really don't seem to be that many bell cows anymore. And Chubb probably could have been, but usually all it takes is one injury and then that's it. However, Henry did have like an ACL tear or something like that, and then bounced back. So I guess it can be done. But once again, as much as I like Nick Chubb, I wouldn't put him in the same conversation with Henry.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying like he probably could have been one of those guys.
Yeah, I feel like you're
like the could have been. I'm not saying he is. I'm saying he potentially could have been. Because that's how good, like pre-knee tear, that's how good Nick Chubb was. He was insane.
Yeah, no, he was. I mean, I've watched him play. I mean, no one could tackle that guy. It's just, I really hate that knee tear thing. I really do, man.
Yeah, it's tough. Any other news on the docket before we move on?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, cool. We're going to move on. When we come back, we're going to get to our top five tight ends and our preview of the NFC East coming into the 2025 season. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. He's CJ. I'm Chris. Let's get into our top five tight ends. So we're just going to do a combined one because turns out CJ and I had the same five in the same exact order when we first were sharing our top fives with each other. Turned out we had the same one. So we're just going to get right into it at this point. At number five, we have Mark Andrews. A lot of people probably wouldn't have kept Mark Andrews. If you were to have a conversation about Mark Andrews by week 8 of last season, I don't think a lot of people would have kept Mark Andrews in the top five, but then he started to really produce again. But the problem is also that a lot of people will think about the drop on the 2-point conversion in the AFC divisional game against the Bills this past season. But when you think of Mark Andrews, other than that, you think of reliability. You think of a guy that can block. You think of a guy that is almost like George Kittle, but not to the same tier. He's very, very good still. Yeah, he's getting a little older. He may have been overshadowed by Isaiah Likely for the first 7 weeks of the season, maybe. But then Mark Andrews showed us he's still that guy.
Yeah. Look, Mark Andrews statistically last season really didn't do that bad. He had like 11 receiving touchdowns. It's also just that drop in the playoffs is going to haunt him. And that in of itself, look, I'm sorry. I feel like one play doesn't necessarily make or break you, but he is also getting up there in age. And one thing that concerns me is how many targets is he going to get? Because is he the tight end one in Baltimore? Yeah, he is. But Isaiah Likely is nipping at his heels right now, and he's gobbling up a lot of his targets. Likely had, I want to say, what, anybody had like 5 or 6 touchdowns last year? Something.
Yeah, Mark Andrews?
Likely. Likely is 5. Right on his. Okay, he had 5. Okay. Like I was saying, the Likely's on his heels right now, and Likely is breathing down his neck. They have 2 tight end ones. And on top of that, they just paid Rashad Bateman. He's going to get more looks. And, you know, their wide receiver one is Zay Flowers. So the Ravens offense sneakily has a few more mouths to feed. And that's why I at least put him at 5.
Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. 6 actually is the number for Isaiah Likely for touchdowns. And Mark Andrews sneakily got up to 11 touchdowns last season with 55 catches, 673 yards. But yeah. Moving on to number 4, Trey McBride. Gosh, get this guy a touchdown. God damn. What was it? The most receptions without a touchdown? Like, at one point, and he didn't get it till week 16. 111 catches, 1,100 yards. He was basically the number one target for the Cardinals this season, and easily is a top 5 guy in what about to be his 3rd season. Insane stuff.
No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
He kind of reminds me, this is going to be a bit of an extreme example, but the tight end equivalent of Julio Jones, where he's a yardage guy, racks it up, but at the end of the day, he just didn't. I mean, like Julio, I meant, he just never really had a nose for the end zone. He always struggled to find it. But I mean, you'd be good for like 5-6 a year, but you know, tight ends are going to be a little different, you know what I mean? But that's kind of how I view Trey McBride. Like, I think he had 2 touchdowns last season, 3 the year before that. I mean, I think he's going to do better, but if Marvin Harrison Jr. develops, then that could be a problem.
Yeah. And, you know, the Cardinals also, a couple months ago, making McBride the highest paid tight end in the NFL as well. So, you know how Arizona feels about him and the fact that they want to keep him around for a little bit, which you should. Moving on to number 3, Sam LaPorta. Now, LaPorta's had a couple injury issues, mainly from last year. But this is another guy, when you think about reliability, Sam LaPorta is up there. And one of the biggest, when the Detroit Lions offense is spinning, LaPorta is one of the biggest reasons why it's spinning the way it is. The way he can block, the way he can get downfield and get open, the way he can just get up and catch a ball is great. 60 catches, 726 yards, 7 touchdowns last season. As mentioned, missing only 1 game last year. But yeah, LaPorta number 4.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no, I know what you meant. LaPorta, he's the opposite of Trey McBride. McBride's a yardage guy. LaPorta's a touchdown guy. And even though you could argue that he took a step back from last year, he still had over 700 yards and 7 touchdowns. Sure, he had 10 his rookie year, but come on. 17 touchdowns over 2 seasons, I think, is still pretty good. And yeah, sure, there was a bit of a sophomore slump, but I feel like he's going to rebound. And I mean, I feel like people are panicking a little over nothing, you know, just because you had guys like Jameson Williams coming into his own. You had Jahmyr Gibbs taking more catches as well. There's like I said, there's a lot of mouths to feed on the Lions offense as well. But LaPorta is their big red zone threat, as evidenced, like I said, by his 7 touchdowns last season. And I think he's probably good for about 9-10 next season, for what it's worth. But overall, he's young. It's his 3rd year. And he's definitely worth number 3.
Yeah, 100%. Number 2, rookie last year, setting a bunch of tight end records for receptions, receiving yards. It's Brock Bowers. 112 catches, 1,194 receiving yards, 5 touchdowns. Broke Mike Ditka's rookie tight end receiving records from 1960. Insane. Brock Bowers is almost... I feel like Brock Bowers is what people thought Kyle Pitts was going to be. A guy that can get downfield, get open, and make big plays. But and the craziest part is that nobody's throwing it. Like, there's not a good quarterback.
Exactly. That's literally the most impressive part about Brock Bowers, is that his quarterbacks were Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. And despite that, as a rookie, he came in, and not just as a rookie tight end, he came in, wrestled the starting job away from Michael Mayer, got 112 catches, 1,194 yards, and 5 touchdowns to boot. And I don't know, but Chris, what do you think? I mean, I feel like that's pretty self-explanatory.
Brock Bowers, yeah, there. I think the last thing you can really say about Brock Bowers is that he can make a major case for being the top tight end after this coming season.
He's going to have to do it again, though. And for these tight ends, unless you're like Tony Gonzalez, Rob Gronkowski, prime Travis Kelce, like, these back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons are something that's incredibly difficult because the tight end position by itself is really top-heavy.
Yeah, 100%. Which leads us to number one, George Kittle. He is the highest-paid tight end in the league. Obviously, I mentioned Trey McBride, but that was 2 months ago. George Kittle, as of a couple weeks ago, was throwing the bag, $19.1 million per year for him. And that's just highest paid tight end per AAV. But, you know, you talk about what makes a tight end. This is what makes a tight end. George Kittle is like, when you think of the top greatest tight ends, and you mentioned two of them, Gronk and Tony Gonzalez, blocking, very physical, and can catch the damn football and score touchdowns. And George Kittle can do all of those. And there's a reason why he's the highest paid tight end.
Yeah, Kittle, what else is there to even say? He seems to, emphasis on seems to, have shaken off a lot of his injury concerns, and at least for the past two seasons, three really, has put up some very solid numbers. I mean, even 2022, where he didn't crack 1,000 yards, he still had 11 touchdowns. 2023, cracked 1,000 and had 6 touchdowns, and cracked 1,000 again last season and had 8 touchdowns. And he's another one where age really doesn't seem to be affecting him like it has some other tight ends.
At least not yet. Get
there. Not yet. You're right. And as a whole, with guys like Deebo Samuel gone, guys like Brandon Ayuk becoming blatantly untrustworthy, I really think we could see George Kittle, dare I say, perform even better.
Yeah. Could definitely make the argument for that. But, all right, now we got through the top five. Let's go through some other tight end names, because we mentioned it's a very top-heavy list. But we'll just get right into the first one. Everyone knows it. Travis Kelce did make the top five, and he's old, and he sucks. There's my analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real honest to God. Like, that's actually good analysis. I'm tired of hearing Travis Kelce, he's the GOAT tight end, or at least in the conversation. I'm sorry, the past 2 years, he has officially played himself out. His big claim to fame was, oh, he had the most consecutive 1,000-yard seasons for a tight end. Meanwhile, it's kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. I try to think of another scenario that's similar to this, where in reality, Mahomes just kind of force-fed him the ball, whether he was open or not. He seems to be more – he's always been a volume target kind of guy, a guy who could never really do more with less, a guy that needs his targets in order to rack up his numbers. I mean, you're not going to see him have three catches but turn it into 75 yards and a touchdown. If he gets three catches, he's going to go for like 20 yards. He's a volume guy. And especially last year, now his second straight season under – 1,000 yards, and even still, he was always good for like 8 to 12 touchdowns a year. Now he's had 3. He's slower, and like I said, like the decline, it's not just in the numbers, in the eye test as well. He's just not as dominant. They're not really throwing to him unless he's like wide open. I mean, and even still, he was never that good through contact. He was never a good blocker. But now they went on running plays where the tight ends have to block. They outright take him off the field. They have another guy, Gray by the last name.
Noah Gray.
And this other dude behind him who are primarily used to block, because Kelce either used to be that he won't. Now I just don't think he can. I mean, that's
I don't even know if it's like a thing that he can't, like a question if he can or not. You just have two younger tight ends that you know will hold up the job at that point, so you might as well just go with the other two rather than your top guy. That I don't know.
I mean, maybe, but the biggest thing for Kelce going into next year is that Rashee Rice is coming back. Xavier Worthy showed some flashes, and you're no longer a one-man show. Mahomes now has the ability to spread the ball around. And once again, when there are more mouths to feed, your targets decrease. That's just simple math.
Yeah, 100%.
And to be fair, the only reason Kelce's numbers are even as passable as they were last season is because Rashee Rice got hurt.
Yeah. Rashee Rice. I mean, the entire wide receiver room in general for the Chiefs was just beaten and battered because Rashee Rice was out for the year at one point. Hollywood Brown missed the majority of the season, didn't show up till what, like week 16 or something like that. I don't even know, but yeah, his number, you could 100% make the argument that the numbers are inflated because the fact that there's injuries in the receiver room the entire year. But looking at a couple other tight ends real quick that probably our fringe top five, Dallas Goedert, I'd probably throw in there. Tucker Kraft, probably another one that could rise through the ranks this season. 7 touchdowns last season, pretty solid for him. Cade Otton, I'll throw that one out there because, you know, when Chris Godwin and Mike Evans were both hurt for those few weeks, Cade Otton was like the number one target in the entirety of the league through those few weeks. So he could be another guy that's on the rise, but it's kind of similar to some of the others in this top five that a lot of mouths to feed.
Now that's pretty much it, but we're at 42 minutes now. I think we should move on. What do you think?
No, I agree. We're going to move on, take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into our NFC East preview. Are the Eagles going to take the top spot again? Are the Giants still going to suck? And are they going to go to Jackson Dart? What are the Cowboys going to do? And can the Commanders keep on their hot streak from last year? This is the Pumbrewski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You're listening to the Fumbrewski Podcast by Power 818 Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. He's CJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. Let's get into the NFC East preview. So from last year, of course, the Eagles, the Super Bowl champs, won the NFC East, followed by the Commanders, Cowboys, and Giants. Eagles finished at 14-3, Commanders 12-5, Cowboys 7-10. And the Giants 3-14. And that's where we'll start, is the New York Football Giants. Well, the most prominent moves that they made was drafting Abdul Carter, number 3, drafting Jackson Dart with the 25th pick, trading back into the first round to draft Jackson Dart, right?
They did, yes.
Yep. And then probably an underrated pick, Cam Scatabo, picked in the 4th round, who a lot of people are kind of putting their eyes on at the moment. But, you know, this is a New York Giants team that is definitely going to be a little interesting in the sense that they'll be good, interesting in the sense of they're going to suck, but what direction, what?
I said, but they'll at least be watchable.
Yes. Like, what direction of suck are we talking about here? Are we talking about a suck of, like, they're going to suck that they're going to need another draft to really see some sort of production or maybe some sort of improvement? Or are they going to suck where you can see the improvement through this season? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, believe me. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But as far as the Giants go, I don't think they're going to be good, but I think they'll be watchable. That's what it comes down to. And let's be real, they probably have the most entertaining QB room in the entire league. You've got Mr. Unlimited, you know, Mr. Dad Jokes himself, Russell Carrington Wilson. That's actually his middle name. Look it up. You got everyone's favorite, Famous Jameis. The Lord, I mean, may the Lord deliver him from pick sixes. I mean, seriously, we love Jameis. Got to be one of my favorite players in the league.
I love Jameis.
He's like a fun guy, man. Like, he just looks like a really happy dude. He just looks like he's fun to be around. Then he's got Jackson Dart, you know, rookie out of Eli Manning's alma mater, Ole Miss, and wannabe mobster Tommy DeVito. So I think it's going to be cinema, that QB room. Of course, that cinema is going to get like a 20 on Rotten Tomatoes, but it's going to be something nonetheless. As the rest of the team, though, I'm interested in seeing Abdul Carter. I am really interested to see how Malik Nabers progresses now that, you know, he's actually going to have somebody. I mean, say what you about Russ, but he's solid. Like, he's not abysmal. And hey, who knows? Maybe Jameis gets to chuck some bombs to him as well. Will Wandale Robinson improve? And what about Tyrone Tracy? He's extremely underrated. So as a whole, I want to see how this Giants unit tends to click, especially since it has become abundantly clear that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane are on the hot seat.
I was about to go. That was going to be my next talking point was Brian. We know Joe Shane is on hot seat. We know that. I think that's that's pretty clear. Brian Daboll.
I don't feel like he should be located.
He shouldn't be. He shouldn't be. He shouldn't be. He is the product of a dysfunctional organization. Like he was given the keys to a shitty franchise and was able to get him to a playoff berth with Daniel Jones and got a playoff win with Daniel Jones.
Yes.
Like he's just year in and year out, he's been given such a shit roster and they're expecting him to make lemons out of it or lemonade out of it.
Unfortunately, but that you pretty much just summed up the Giants right there, Chris. I don't understand why Dable's on the hot seat because for what it's worth, I do think he's a very good coach.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not a world beater, but I do think he's a good coach.
He's one of the few coaches from the Belichick tree that have somewhat done well as a head coach.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. But I don't understand why all these Giants fans have such a fetish for firing him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you do realize, like, he's the only reason you won that playoff game against the Vikings back in the day. Remember that? I do. Some would say Pepperidge Farm remembers, if you get that reference. Then salute to you. But seriously, how short-sighted can this franchise be? And if they do fire him, now look, Shane firing him, I get it. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, they shouldn't fire Shane. They'd be right to. It is the right thing to do to get rid of Joe Shane. But Daboll, now that just seems lazy. And that would reflect really poorly on ownership. But the one thing I will say is I do think that the Maras should be thanking their lucky star that the Jets are right across the hall from them because, oh my God, I feel like the Maras would get a lot more hate if they didn't share a stadium with the other embarrassment to East Rutherford, that is the Jets.
Yeah. So the Giants finished with a 3-14 record last year. I'll give them 5-12 this year and still finishing last.
Yeah, 5-12 seems about right.
Moving on to the Dallas Cowboys. Finished 7-10. Honestly, for the amount of injuries that the Cowboys had to deal with last year, respect that they got to 7-10. Respect that they got there. Because with like all the injuries, like it was almost like a Detroit Lions level of injuries, just minus the fact that they were still doing good because the Cowboys weren't doing good at all. Cowboys have not made the NFC Championship since 1996. And I do not, I see this as another year where they will not make it. I could even see them not making it the next 5 years. Most notable pickup really that they had was trading for George Pickens. So now their wide receiver room is CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens, Jalen Tolbert, Kevontae Turpin, Jake Ferguson. I'll shout out Jake Ferguson, another name we didn't throw out there when we were talking about the tight ends. Also a very solid tight end. But other than that, there's not really much else going on.
Yeah, that's how it seems to be. And as for my record prediction for them, and I'm going to stand on this, I think, I don't care if they stay healthy, I think they go 7-10 again, 8-9 at best. You know why, Chris? What? Chris, you're my buddy. Love you to death. Pause. But there's one thing you forgot to mention. New head coach, Brian Schottenheimer.
Yes.
Who should not be a head coach. Yes. And that is a team that needs a strong leader, like an actual real competent game planner to go far. They don't have that. So 7-10 again, maybe 8-9.
Yeah. You mentioned the record part. I actually wanted to go through the schedule because the Cowboys, much like the Dolphins, are notorious for not beating teams over 500. So real quick down the schedule, Eagles opening night loss.
L.
Giants, I'll give them the win. 1-1.
Yeah.
Bears.
That's going to be tough. This feels like a game that they should win, but head coaching or coaching in general is really going to bite them.
I'll give the Bears on this one. I'll give the Bears the win.
I could see that.
1-2. Packers.
L.
L. 1-3. Jets. 2-3. W. Panthers.
I think they're going to win, but it's going to be a game that's closer than what it should be.
Yeah. What are we at now? 3-3?
Yeah, something like that.
3-3. Now you're at home against Washington.
Chris, we kind of got to speed it up.
I know. Washington, I'll give them the win just because it's at home. Broncos
lost. They could probably split with Washington, but they'll lose both to Philly.
Yeah. I'll honestly give them 9-8. I'll give them 9-8.
Maybe if everything goes right, but regardless, let's move on to the Commanders.
Yeah. Washington Commanders. Boy, what a turnaround for the Commanders. That's for sure, really. Big pickup that they had in the draft was Josh Connerly, tackle from Oregon, beefing up the O-line a little bit, which they needed. And this is a team that, like, not really a lot changed, right? Still got Jaden Daniels, and this season is really going to ride on if Jaden Daniels is going to have a sophomore slump or not. I think that's basically as cut and dry as you can get with this.
But yeah, I do agree though. I don't believe personally that it's going to hurt them all that much. I mean, the sophomore slump. I mean, I said the same thing about CJ Stroud. But as a whole, what's it really going to do? I mean, I actually think these things staying the same is good. Gives Daniels another year to acclimate. And also they got Debo, so maybe he can turn back the clock.
Yeah, 100%. For the Commanders, I would probably give them similar record, 12-5, maybe 11. I'd say maybe 11-6.
Somewhere between 11 and 12 wins, yeah.
Yeah. Assuming that the NFC doesn't have as ridiculously good of a year as they did last year, maybe like the 5 seed.
Yeah. However, it has come to my attention that our producer Adam Wright has some breaking news. Adam, what do you got?
Jake Dobbins signing a 1-year deal with the Denver Broncos.
Oh boy. Oh my goodness, it's finally happened. J.K. Dobbins injury prone but still good, has finally been signed. Hallelujah.
It's about damn time.
Real talk. It is, yeah.
Yeah. And Nish, we just read a report from Sports Illustrated that that he was potentially going to go to the Bills, of course, with the whole animosity with James Cook kind of going on too. So there was some whispers that that could go on, but this just whole 180, just let's go to the divisional rival and play ball over there.
Oh, and yeah.
If you're Denver, this is a steal. This is a steal. Unbelievable steal.
I mean, it sucked that he got hurt last year, but I really do think that he rebounded from his injuries nicely, so why can't he do it again? I mean, I know it's against the odds, but hey, let's see. And if anyone could use him, it'd probably be Sean Payton. And look, don't get me wrong, I have my misgivings about Payton, but he knows how to use a running back. We'll give him that.
Yeah. He missed four games last year and still had 900 yards, was just 100 yard, like just under 100 yards short of 1,000. And if you're the Broncos, your starting running back would have been RJ Harvey or Audric Estime. So this is huge in an offense that we've talked about before. This is basically an offense, analytically speaking, was basically the same thing as 2023 with Russ. And it was just the defense that stepped up to be a top five defense in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But now you got a guy in J.K. Dobbins that can give you an established run game at this point, like a real established run game. Now that's the other thing, though, is he going to stay healthy for that?
I don't know, because one thing, you know, about the whole physicality of the position is that he's already the best running back they have, right? You guys know I wasn't a huge fan of the RJ Harvey pickup, and Audric Estime, we really don't know what they have there. He's going to be facing stacked boxes every time he takes the field. I do assume that due to his injury history, they're going to lean towards a running back by committee, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when he comes out there, teams are probably going to be in the know, we'll say.
Yeah, 100%. It'd be interesting to see if they try to pick someone up to pair up with Dobbins, but who's really available at that point?
I don't know.
They'd have to trade.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say Nick Chubb, but no, he's gone.
Yeah, exactly. Nick Chubb would be the next guy, I guess, at that point. Hey, that'd be kind of slick of the Broncos to do if Chubb was still available. 2 1-year deals for two guys that have a very high ceiling but have the slight injury history.
True. But anyway, let's keep pushing with the NFC East before we got it.
Yes. We only have one team left, and it's the reigning Super Bowl champs, the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, the Eagles had somewhat of big losses, to say the least, especially in the secondary. C.J. Gardner-Johnson got let go. James Bradbury got let go. Help me out here. Who else am I forgetting?
That they lost on the defense. C.J. Gardner-Johnson got traded. They lost linebacker Warren Burks. Milton Williams and Josh Sweat are gone as well.
I forgot about Milton Williams.
Well, you're a Pats fan. You shouldn't.
Yeah, I know. That's the biggest part. But, yeah, I see this Eagles team basically doing the same exact thing, really, as they did last year. They lost one piece on the line that I'm blanking on. CJ, help me. Mekhi Becton.
I was saying, like, come on. I mean, you knew it.
That's the thing. A lot of these names are on the tip of my tongue, and I'm just like, ugh. But, in terms of the Eagles, there's something about their GM who's also leaving my head, dude. I'm terrible right now.
Howie Roseman.
Jeez. That's when you know we need to wrap this shit up, I guess. Howie Roseman is just that guy, and he just picks up guy after guy after guy after guy. And this Eagles team is basically reloaded to go back to back. Now that's the other thing is, are they going to have a Super Bowl hangover, which most teams have had? I guess the only other team that hasn't had these Super Bowl hangovers have been the Chiefs as of recent, just talking just this side of the decade. Other than that, in terms of teams that have gone to the Super Bowl and have had like to either play the Chiefs or just have gone to the Super Bowl in general, hasn't looked that great for them. Can the Eagles do that now? Especially after the first time that they played the Chiefs, they ended up collapsing at the end of the season and being a first-round exit.
I mean, no, you're right. You're right. Also, I would like to point out, by the way, that the J.K. Dobbins news is up on the Fumble Rooski page. I think everyone listening should see their way to go like. But that's neither here nor there. The thing with Philly is, I mean, granted, last time they played the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, they suffered Super Bowl hangover. But the difference is they lost. This time, they won. They are the reigning champs. And honestly, I don't think, I mean, the roster didn't change too much. I mean, they drafted pretty well again. Shocker. But, hey, come on. As a whole, I see them largely staying the same. I do.
Yeah.
And, yes, I know Adam. Sorry, folks. Adam's telling us who we lost. We have literally gone over this. If you mention this again, I'm going to lose it. I'm sorry. But it's like, no, Chris, did I not mention Milton Williams and Josh Sweat?
Yeah, I asked for help, and you gave me help at the snap of the fingers, and Adam's coming over here 5 minutes later giving me help.
No, but it's okay. We love Adam, obviously, Paul's. But no. But overall, the one thing, this is going to sound stupid, but hear me out. The one thing that does actually concern me for Philly, if we keep talking about Super Bowl hangover, let's talk about something else arbitrary. Oh, Christ, the Madden curse. For those of you who don't know, Saquon Barkley will be on the cover of Madden 26. And that is known to do a number on players. If they're not injured, then they have down years. So, I don't know. Let's just hope it doesn't happen, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess look at Josh Allen. He didn't suffer from the Madden curse besides losing the AFC Championship again, if you want to call that a curse.
It is, yeah.
It is a curse, but I mean, compared to other Madden curses, I'd say pretty Josh exactly. Allen won MVP as well. So maybe we're gone from the Madden curse, maybe possibly. Not.
I wouldn't know.
We won't know till we get there.
Saquon's also Saquon's also a running back, though, so you know.
Well,
usually whenever they have a big year, it's tough for them to repeat it. No one knows why.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I'm going to look up running backs that were on the Madden cover real quick. Because.
You know, I get it. But as a whole, roster wise, Philly can just kind of chill for a bit. I mean, granted, they lost some guys, but their roster is still stacked with talent, especially with the NFC not having that many great teams. I mean, you got the Lions. But, you know.
Yeah. Other running backs that made it, Eddie George, Madden 01. His career kind of took a slight downturn after that, but it wasn't anything crazy. Sean Alexander, Madden 06. Went from MVP to being a bum. Payne Hillis, Madden 12.
Oh, one-year wonder.
One of the most random 1,000-yard years that, for some reason, earned him the Madden cover.
What about last year? Christian McCaffrey, man.
Yeah, last year, Christian McCaffrey. Yeah. Sorry, I was going in order. Adrian Peterson in Madden 25, not last year, Madden 25, because Christian McCaffrey is Madden 25 from last. You get it. Barry Sanders was also on the Madden 25 cover with
Adrian Peterson. Retired.
Marshall Faulk, Madden 03. Marshall Faulk was still a solid running back, but he was towards his older years at that point.
So yeah, it's been brutal for him, man. Yikes.
Yeah. For the majority of the running backs on the, I would say all the running backs on the list that made the Madden cover, it was a little brutal. But I guess if we're going to wrap this, the Eagles up, basically we're saying that the Eagles are going to be, are going to repeat in the division, which hasn't happened since
first time in years.
First time, which hasn't happened since, a little over 20 years ago when the Eagles, won it from 01 to 04. Making it to the NFC Championship, in a few of those years as well, 04 and 02 more specifically. 04, they made it to the Super Bowl, lost to the Pats. 02, lost to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the NFC Championship game, in which the Buccaneers won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, like, I know it doesn't, I know it's not the end of the world, but dude, the Madden curse.
Yeah.
It's something else.
It is. I get, we won't know till week one. Maybe, but who knows? Maybe Saquon has some mystery Achilles injury that he has to
go check for.
But that'll do it for us. Any other, we don't have any other breaking news, right?
Nope, we're good.
All right, good. That'll do it for another Tuesday episode of the Full Maruski Podcast. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and in which we'll be talking about best offensive linemen and the NFC North.
Yeah, right? No, that's, yeah, unless any other news breaks.
Yeah, unless any other news breaks. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Be sure to follow our Instagram, FullMaruski_podcast, keep up with the pod and latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, he's CJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich, executive producer Adam Wright. We'll see you next Tuesday. Over and out.